yesterday we were discussing the principle that came from the Master about Tolu of Zabin Zvini Zvini, the application to Kedusha. Just a quick recap. So the Gemara told us really a big chiddush in the realm of buying and selling. If I go up to somebody and I say, I want to buy that car, I want to buy that house, he says, I'm not interested in selling. And I said, no, I really, really want it. First of all, I'm in violation of Losachmon. Okay, that's also true. But I keep on pushing and pressuring, and then I finally say to the guy, listen, if you don't sell to me, I'm going to kill you, and here's the money. I'm willing to pay you. And the person consents, out of lack of a choice. He says, okay, fine, I'll sell it to you. So the Gemara says that the Mechir is valid. The Mechir is, in fact, binding, because two things happen. Number one, he did consent, albeit it was done under duress. And number two, he did receive his money. So at the end of the day, those two factors combined applies for us the principle called Talyu of Zabin Zvini Zvini. So the Gemara then wanted to jump and say, maybe the same is true when it comes to Kedushin. We're learning it's a Kedushin Abay. So the Gemara is talking about Dasa Isha for Kedushin. So in theory, if I pressure the woman to say, if you don't marry me, I'm going to kill you, and I give her the ring, so I gave her the Kedushin, and she consented, so I would have thought that the din is that she's Mekudeshes also. And in fact, the Gemara says that Min HaTorah she is, Min HaTorah, just as Talyu of Zabin works by sales, Talyu of Zabin works by Kedushin also, but the Chachamim will mafkir the Kedushin. The Chacham declared that we're not going to let such a thing happen. It's a terrible, terrible thing. And therefore, we're going to uproot the Kedushin. So although with the Torah, she should have been married, but the Rabbanu, we're going to declare the Kedushin is null and void, and she, in fact, is not married. So with that background, the Rashba, in the 15th of the Maamar Kamos, on the second page, in the 15th of the Maamar Kamos, so the Rashba quotes the Machlekes that we've shown him. How does this play out in the opposite case? What if it's not the woman who's being forced, the other way around, it's the man that's being forced? So if you take a look at the 15th Maamar Kamos, the Rashba, it's the third line from the bottom. Via ish she'ansu l'kadesh. What if she turns around and says to the man, I'm going to kill you if you don't marry me? Kasav haravam, zal kiddush of kiddushin. So the Rambam writes, under these circumstances, the Kedushin would be valid. What's the basis for the Rambam? Why should that be so? So the Chora, the basis is as follows. After all, Min HaTorah, Talyu of HaZabah, should really work. Min HaTorah, it should work in both directions. But with the Rabbanan, they were forced to uproot the Kedushin to protect the interests of the woman. When it comes to the man, there's really no interest of the man to protect. For what would we gain by being Mafkir the Kedushin? What's the purpose to be Mafkir the Kedushin? Let them, quote-unquote, remain married. He could divorce her against her will, minator, whatever he wants. He can marry another wife, minator, whatever he wants. So he's not going to be locked in. He's not the aguna. In a case where she's forced into the marriage that she doesn't want, she's mamish stuck. She can't get a get. She can't marry somebody else. She's mamish stuck. She's in a pickle. So therefore, mid the rabbanon, we have to uproot the kedushin. When it comes to the man, there's no reason to uproot the kedushin. So minator, let him marry somebody else. Let him divorce her a later point against her will. So since mid the Rabbanan, there's no need to change the din, therefore we're stuck, so to speak, with the din deraisa, and therefore we declare the condition is in fact valid. That seems to be the Rambam Shita. But then the Rashba quotes someone who disagrees. Rav Bala Iter Kosov, the Bala Iter disagrees. The Bala Iter writes, no, She'ein Kiddush of Kiddushin. The Kiddushin is not valid. Why? The Talua V'Zabin Amru, Talua V'Kani Lo Amru. Says the Bala Iter, we only have a source in the Gemara for the principle of forcing the mocher to sell something. We never find anywhere in the Gemara that there's a principle called Talyu of a Kani, that I force the purchaser, I force the buyer to buy something. So says the Bala Iter, in the case of marriage, let's go back to what we've been saying all along, the model of marriage is a makna and a kona. The Isha is the machna. She is, quote-unquote, selling herself. She is being acquired, whatever, so to speak, whatever that means, in quotation marks, she's being acquired by her husband. That's what the Mishnah speaks about, Isha Nikneis Labayla. So says the Bala Iter, if we follow the model of Dina Mamadus to the T, it'll turn out that, in theory, we could force the wife. Minator, at least, we could force the wife, but Minator, we can't force the husband, because the husband is not the machna, he's the kona, and therefore, Taliyua the koni, we don't have any precedent for that in Halacham. So comes the Rashba and says about this Bala Iter, the Nirin Divri HaRambam, says the Rashba, I think that the Rambam is correct. The E Agav Onse Gomer V'Zobin Kol Shagin the Gomer V'Kani. Ask the Rashba, it's a Kavachimer. To force somebody to sell something, if that works in Halacha, if the person consents, he says Rotzani, he gets the cash, and we're going to say, okay, we're going to look the other way and say that the sale is valid. So even das makne, even das mocher, we're willing to water down the definition of kal v'chayme das kona. Which level of das is a higher level of das? Which is more necessary for a sale to take place? If I'm selling you a car, which das is more important? We need both. But which is the critical das? Obviously, the das machna is more important. Otherwise, it's gezeila. Das kona is also, yeah, it's important, but it's not on par with the das machna. So says the Rashba Kavachomer, madach das machna, we're willing to forego, we're willing to water down and say, well, he said okay, and he consented under the rest, and he got the money, and call it a day. So das kona, how much more so? So this machlokes between the Bala Itur against the Rama, the Rashba, is a machlokes at a level of deraisa. Can we apply the principle of Taluah v'Zobin vis-a-vis the Kona not? So for some strange reason, the Baal Itur assumed that not only Taluah v'Zobin, Taluah v'Kani, and the Rama and the Rashba say no, that it applies equally, more so to the Kona. And for Kert, says the Rama, when it comes to the Kona, when it comes to Kedushin, there's no reason to be Oka the Kedushin. So this Machlokes now between the Rishonim has to be understood in light of a din that appears in Maseches Ksubos. I didn't put it on the Marmar Komos. It's a sugi that appears in Maseches Ksubos, where the Mishnah and the Gemara talk about a very unique type of a marriage. It's a marriage that almost shouldn't have been happened in the first place. And the Torah describes in Pashki Seitze, if a person is ma'anes as a basula, a person goes and he forces, he rapes a young girl, and now the Torah says what he's supposed to do. So first of all, he has to pay a kenas. He's got to pay a very, very heavy fine, heavy penalty, chamishim kesef. That's number one. Then the Torah also gives the girl and her father the option if, whatever reason, she wants to marry him. And again, it's hard for us to understand, you know, whatever the society dictates, that she wants to marry him now. So the Torah says he is forced to marry her. He is b'chuyav bin haTorah to marry her, and he has to treat her like a regular wife, and he's never allowed to divorce her, and he's mamash stuck into this marriage that he, because of this situation that he created. If the girl doesn't want to marry this man, or the father doesn't want this particular person, then obviously no one's forcing them to go through with this marriage, but the husband, we're going to be kaifel, so we're going to force the husband to marry her. So comes the Avnei Miluim, let's say for Ktzais, the Avnei Miluim, and he asks the Baal Kash. He says, I don't understand. We're going to force this person to marry her? What would that mean? What would the mechanics be? He's yelling and screaming, I don't want to marry this person. And basically say, tough, you're gonna force. Says the Avnei Miluim, what in effect we're doing is figuratively putting a gun to his head. Instead of literally beating him up, we're saying, well, you are mechuyav to, because the Torah said so. And if you don't listen, we're going to enforce this din in the Torah. We're going to force you to marry this girl, provided that her and her father want to go through with the shidduch. So comes the Avnei Miluim and says, how does that work in mechanics? So according to the Rambam and according to the Rashba, who say, Taluya v'kaddish, kiddush of kiddushin, vis-a-vis the man, that we can force a man, I mean, not that we should, but we have the ability, and the halacha has that possibility of forcing the man to get married, and the kiddushin will be valid. So then I understand what the mechanics are. The Torah is forcing the person to go through with this marriage. But according to the Baal Itur, it's a non-starter. According to the Baal Itur, what do you mean the Torah is forcing him to go through the marriage? It's not going to be a marriage. The mitzvah is for him to marry her. It's not going to be binding. It's not going to be valid. It's not going to be a kedushin. So how does the Torah give us this parasha of the Torah obligates this person to marry her against his will? How is that even going to happen? How is that kedushin going to take place if there's no possibility in halacha of forcing a man ever to become to be mekadosh a woman?
Didn't he do a Maisa Kinyan or a Maisa Kiddushin when he raped?
Oh, well, he didn't really do it. He did a Maisa Bia, but that Bia was done with Torah's Nus. That Bia wasn't done with Kiddushin. It wasn't even done with her consent. It wasn't done in Adam, nothing. So it didn't have all the mechanism of Kiddushin. So how do you understand this din in the Torah of forcing the Ma'anes to marry her? How can you force anybody? The concept of forcing a man to do marriage doesn't make any sense. So the Avnei Miluim suggests that
When we went up to initially, though, the idea that at the end of the day, since he's receiving some compensation, that's enough to justify this, you know, this force. So in this case also, at the end of the day, he's not...
Well, his compensation is getting a wife. Well, he is getting
right,
a wife.
And we said that was a valid...
No, but that was the chiddush of the Baal Itur that the Rashba didn't understand, that the Baal Itur says, with all the compensation, hakol mikol kol, it only works vis-a-vis the machna, not vis-a-vis the kona. Every kona gets compensation, he gets
right.
The item.
Right.
And the Baal Itur, for some strange reason, said it still doesn't work. So okay, I don't say I understand the Baal Itur, but according to the Baal Itur, why should the case of onus be...
Because I'm saying it was the Baal Itur, going back... how do you understand that Gemara initially? How Tosos, when we learned that he's getting Shek Sazona, that old concept existed, and that he's getting, or the Sheva Prutim, that's still compensation. That's still...
No, You're right.
Allow the marriage to
you're, no, but again, the compensation is going the other direction.
Going the other direction, still at the end of the day.
But he's getting something.
He's getting something.
Right, so that's Akasha. That's exactly the Yerubah. That's the Rosh Kasha. He says, I understand. If it works, Lagabi the Makna, why can't it work Lagabi the Kona? So you're right. We don't understand what the reasonability there is, but how does it fit into this possible formation? So the Abba Malum suggests that maybe the answer can be found in the Gemara that we learned yesterday. If you go back to the 13th of the Mar Makomos for a moment. When the Gemara first introduced the din of Taliyah of his oven, the original din of Rav Huna, that if I force somebody into selling his car, and I give him the money, and he says he consents, so b'diavad, after the fact, the sale is going to be valid. So the Gemara wanted to know, what was the sources? What was the precedent for Rav Huna? So if you look again, back in the second, line from the top, so the Gemara says in the 13th Mar Makomos, Elchid Desanya, maybe the precedent was from Karbanos. Yakir Velso Malam Chikovin Oso. It says in the Chumash that you could force the person to bring a korban. So I might think you could Yochab al Korcho. You can mamish force him, literally force him against his will. Tamalom Lertzono. In the same breath, the Torah says it has to be Lerotzon. So how do you resolve this apparent contradiction? On the one hand, you could force the person to bring a korban. On the other hand, he has to agree. Haketzad. The answer is Kofin Oso Chiyomarotzani. So this is the source of the principle of Kofin Oso Chiyomarotzani. You force him until he says that he agrees. So you see from Hilchos Karbanos that there is such a concept of duress that can ultimately transform to become Ratzon. So just as that's true in Karbanos, we can extrapolate from there to Kinyanim, to Mechiris as well. That was the Gemara's Havamina, to which the Gemara says, no, V'duma Shani Asam, T'nichle Tevle Kapara. Maybe that's different because he wants a Kapara. The person really in his heart of hearts, deep down, he wants to receive a Kapara for his Averis. So he really is consenting. Unlike the case of selling the car, he's really not consenting. So how do you know from the fact that the person is consenting for Karbanos that he's automatically consenting for Mechiris? So the Gemara says, you're right, not a good right. So Vielami Seifa, so we try again from the end of that Mishnah. There's a principle by a get that sometimes, if the halacha dictates, kavra sach yom rotzani, even though the halacha is that you need rotzon ha-baal, you need the husband to consent to give a get, but if the halacha justifies it, you could actually force him, and that's considered to be miratzono. So just as by gittin, ratzon under duress constitutes a ratzon, so too by mechiros, a ratzon under duress constitutes a ratzon. So Gemara says, no, that was strike three from yesterday, remember, Dumashani Asam, the mitzvah l'shmar divichachamim. There is different because there's a mitzvah involved. So when there's a mitzvah involved, we assume that in his heart of hearts, he really does want to do the right thing. When it comes to selling a car is not a dvar mitzvah, it's dosha rishus. So the guy doesn't really want to sell it. He's telling, I don't really want to sell it. So you're putting a gun to his head, giving him money, and he's saying rotzani, and therefore he wants to sell it. Not necessarily. But when it comes to mitzvahs, and you put a gun to his head, and he says rotzani, so then taka, we assume he really does want rotzani. So comes out of the bloom and says, what do you see from that line of the Gemara? Take that snip of the Gemara. What that line of the Gemara just told us was, even if there's no din of Taliyah of his oven, even if there's no such thing, even if Rav Huna is not right, even if in the case of selling cars, this whole sugya is not correct, but by Gittin it's going to work anyway. Why is it going to work for Gittin? Because Gittin works for an independent reason. The independent reason is, by mitzvahs, we absolutely assume that's what you want. Belishum suffix. When it comes to mitzvahs, trumps everything. Kaparas, karbanas trumps everything, and mitzvahs trump everything, because in your heart of heart, the Jew really wants to do the right thing. So comes out of the movement says, maybe that's the answer to the case of the onus. If you're going down the regular rules of Taliyah of Zabin, Rav Huna Sugya, so the Bala Itter had a Chiddush, again, we don't understand why, but Bala Itter had a Chiddush, that Rav Huna's din, the buck stops here, it only works to be kai for the Moichah for some mysterious reason. It doesn't work to be kai for the kaina. So when you're working with just Rav Huna's rules, we're going to fall short when it comes to kiddushin. We can't force the husband. But forget about Rav Huna. Assume Rav Huna doesn't exist. Forget Rav Huna. We have another set of rules. The other set of rules is mitzvah. Whenever there's a makom mitzvah, so a makom mitzvah works on its own merits. A makom mitzvah you can always force for, because ultimately the person really does want to say rotzani. The case of being kofa the ones, it's a makom mitzvah. Because the Torah says, well, see Elisha, the Torah says he is now mechuyav. One of the tag mitzvahs is for the ma'anes to now marry this girl who he was ma'anes. So once you're entering into the realm of mitzvah, out of the realm of Dover Rishus, you're not bound by the limitations of the Bala Itter, you're not bound by Rav Huna, the Taliyah of Zabin, but we're in the new sugya is makom mitzvah shiny. So suggest the Avdim Elui, maybe that's the answer to the dilemma according to the Bala Itter. So it's a gewaltige suggestion, except the other Lord rejects it. Why does he reject it? He rejects it based on the end of the Gemara, back to the 13th of the Ramah Kamos. So let's just reacquaint ourselves with the Shach Batar of the Gemara. Rav Huna made his statement, Tal Yuv is Abin Zvinei Zvinei. The Gemara tried to bring a raya from Karbanos, the Gemara rejected it, Kapara is different. The Gemara tried to bring another raya from Gittin, the Gemara rejected it, Mitzvah is different. Finally, the Gemara said, Rav Huna is based on a Svara. The Svara is that he really does agree. Agav Onse Gomer Makni. So now we have a question to ask, what happens when all the dust settles? Once Rav Huna is right, that the Emes Lamito is that Tal Yuv is Abin works even by Devar Rishus, do we no longer need the previous answers? That means the idea of kapara was a nice idea, but it's not really true. The idea of mitzvah was a nice idea, but it's not really true. Once we have Rav Huna, once we have the all-encompassing statement of Rav Huna, we go back on that which we were doich, on that which we rejected Rav Huna's proofs and said, no, mitzvah is different, kapara is different. And we say, you know what? That was a fake answer. That wasn't really true. The real truth, the honest to goodness truth is, Rav Huna's right, that tal yuv is abin zvinei zvinei. If that's Pshad the Gemara said the Avim Elohim, then you can no longer have a Tchis HaMesim on the reasons that the Gemara said before. You can't pick and choose. You're going to pull out of the hat. Oh, that one line of the Gemara, that mitzvahs are different, and that's going to solve the dilemma for the Ones. That's not fair. That's cheating. You're taking a Dichoy that was suggested by the Gemara at one stage of the Shach Vataya, which ultimately was rejected, says the Avim Elohim, you can't use that to bring back to life the opinion of the Baal Eitar. So again,
but the rejection was because Mechira is not a mitzvah.
Okay.
Kedushin so is a mitzvah.
But the question is, what the Avim Elohim is learning, once the Gemara didn't really need the answer anymore. Once the Gemara says that, no, even Dvarim Hershel Rishusa works based on Rav Huna, so that separate category of mitzvah falls by the wayside. The Avdim Luim claims that new category of mitzvah was only necessary because we didn't want to bring a riot to Rav Huna. We wanted to reject the proof of Rav Huna, so we created this new entity called Mitzvah Shiny. At the end of the day, that doesn't exist because Rav Huna's right, so we don't need that new category. Once we don't need that new category, then the rules that govern this entire sugya are only Rav Huna's rules, and the Baal Eitar claims that Rav Huna's rules was only tell you of a Zabid, not tell you of a Kani. So whereas Dr. Fish is saying, no, it's not true. The Gemara's Dichoy of Mitzvah Shani stood on its own 2 feet, is correct, remains correctly all in void, and even in cases where Rav Huna breaks down, like the case of the Baal Eitar, we could still fall back on Mitzvah Shani. That's exactly 2 ways to read this Gemara. Inochinami. So the Avdim Luim suggested a Teretz, and now he's backpedaling on the Teretz because he thinks textually it doesn't fit into the Gemara. When all the dust settles, getting back to the Kedushin story, so maybe we have an answer for the owner's question, maybe not, but the Baal Eitar said what he said. Baal Eitar did say that forcing the man into Kedushin is just not going to work. Forcing the woman, Minat Torah, will work, but the Rabbanah won't. Forcing the man is not going to work at all. And the Ram and the Rashba say, no, what are you talking about? Forcing the man for sure will work. Forcing the woman works. Kavachabah, forcing the man is going to work. The question now becomes, does any of this have any relevance whatsoever? Lamaisa. Nobody's putting the gun to the woman's head, and hopefully no one's putting the gun to the man's head. Sometimes there are a lot of pressures that push people into marriages, but we're not talking about this. This is a different level, a whole different ballgame of pressures. Does any of this play out at all, Lamaisa? So there is a long discussion in the 16th of the Ramah Kamos. So we have to, we're not going to read through the entire Makor, but we have to give a little bit of a background as to what exactly the issue is. Some of you may remember we spoke about this, especially Shavuos night, I'm not mistaken, one of the Shulman Mild nights, and nobody, even those who were there, are not held responsible. Anything said between 12 and 5 in the morning are not held responsible for. Only between 6 and 7 in the morning, those are the things you're held accountable for. The background to the story is as follows. Going back to Gittin for a moment, we know that a get has to be given Mertzona ish. That's the ABCs of Gittin. The man has to consent. What is the din if the man is almost feels being pressured to give the get in a situation where the halacha doesn't require for him to give the get? He feels that he's being pressured to give the get, but it's almost a pressure that he created on his own. How did he create this pressure on his own? He entered into an agreement earlier on where he said, you know, if I don't give a get, so I'm going to be penalized X amount of money. He accepts about himself, whether he should have accepted, shouldn't have accepted. Bottom line, he now finds himself in a situation. He signed on the dotted line, if I don't give a get, so I'm going to pay you $100,000. So now, time comes for him to give the get. and he's really under pressure because he doesn't want to pay that $100,000. So he says, hey, you know what? I'm going to give the get. I don't really want to, but I'd rather get the get than pay the $100,000. So is that considered to be a get meiratzon, or is that potentially considered to be a get ayidei kfiya? Is that a get that's under duress, under force, which would throw into question the validity of the entire get? So that's a big machlokes in Rishon. So there was some Rishon who said, that's not a get kfiya. No one's forcing you to give the get. Pay the $100,000. No one's putting a gun to your head. You have two options. If you choose to give the get rather than pay the penalty, so that was your choice of your own volition. So many of the Bishayim say, that's not called the get ayidei kfiya. Another Bishayim say, no, maybe that's also get ayidei kfiya. He's giving the get because he's in a pickle now, paying the money. So that's almost forcing. He doesn't have $100,000. Where's he going to get $100,000 from? So he has, quote unquote, no choice in the matter. So therefore, that's a get ayidei kfiya, which would throw out the question, minatora, the validity of the get. So that's a big question, Uchus Gittin.
Isn't that a ketubah?
No, it's not really a ketubah. Ketubah is the other way around. Ketubah is with saying to him, don't give the woman the, don't get divorced so fast, because if you get divorced, you can end up having to pay her money. So forget, in this case, he's giving the get to avoid paying the money. Thereby giving the get, he's going to end up having to pay the money. So quote unquote, the concept of a prenuptial agreement could potentially run into a problem with this if it's done incorrectly. Right. That's the whole sugya. We'll talk about that in a moment. So this is a big machlokes de Rishonim. So one can understand that it was get that we try. We're very machmir. It was get. We don't want to shilas, eshesh, mamzeiris down the line. So therefore, in Uchus Gittin, we're very, very machmir about this, and we don't like this. In Uchus Gittin, we'll try to do everything under the sun to try to avoid any of this kind of stuff. And if for some reason he ended up in one of these kinds of contractual agreements beforehand, we're going to tell the woman, listen, in your best interest, be boichel this agreement, because if we're going to give you a get with this agreement in place, someone's going to raise a question about what are the kashas of your get is. So it's much better for this agreement to be batel mevutel. That's the background of Uchus Gittin. So we're not learning Gittin now, we're learning Maseches Kiddushin. The question is, does any of this carry over to Maseches Kiddushin? So there was a practice that existed in the days of the Rishonim that exists in still some of the Hasidic communities today. Most of our communities don't really do this anymore. But it was called Ksivas Tanoim. Now, we know we do Tanoim at the Chuppah. Many of us sign Tanoim at the Chuppah. But if you ever listen carefully to what it says in the Tanoim at the Chuppah, it says absolutely nothing. It says that it's a document that we write that's a very, very modern document that Rav Moshe actually authored, which basically says instead of writing the real Tanoim of days gone by, it's just a nice document saying we agree, this set of parents agree to get married, this set of parents, everyone agrees, b'shalom v'shalva, everyone should be happy, and shalom v'shalva, mazel tov, and k'gan ravel, and shine, and son of that Allah. It's another couple of kibbutim at the chasana. So it doesn't really mean all that much after Tanoim. But the Tanoim that used to be signed in the Middle Ages, which again, we're not halachically mandated, you don't have to sign Tanoim. But the custom in European communities was to sign a document which was not signed at the chuppah, it was signed months before, it was actually signed at the time of the engagement. It was what they used to call the Shtar Shiduchim, or Shtar Tanoim, which basically meant that both sides agreed that they're going to go through with the wedding. It means they just agreed to get engaged, and now they both sign off they're going to go through with the wedding. And if they don't, if one of the sides backs out, that's going to be very embarrassing for the other side. And therefore, they agreed to pay X amount of money as a knas, as a penalty, if they decide to break off the shidduch. That was the real shtar tanoim of the old days. Again, some chassidish communities, they still sign adayim as there. So, okay, so you sign tanoim. Okay, good. So nobody told you to sign it. No, you're not obligated to sign it. But if that's the meaning, people want to sign such a thing. So what could possibly be wrong? So there are two potential issues with the shtar tanoim, two potentially serious halachic issues. One is a momentous issue, and one is a marriage issue. The momentous issue, which is not our issue yet, but we just have to understand it, the momentous issue is, who says such a document is even binding? So that even, let's say, he backs out with the shidduch, who says he has to pay the money? Doesn't this sound like a topic we spoke about in the past, the topic of asmachta? There's a whole sugya in the halacha about asmachta lokadya. If I enter into a deal with you, and the terms of the deal are such that I don't really think I'm ever going to have to pay this money, I'm banking on the fact that I'm never going to have to pay this money. But so why am I entering into this deal? Because you want it. I want it. The minig wants it. So I'm entering into this deal. But in my heart of hearts, I think I'm going to win. I'm not going to lose. So that's what's called asmach. And asmach the lokanya. That's part of the whole sugya. Those were at the famous Super Bowl shiur last year in our Torah. That's the gambling shiur. That was the shiur we gave during the Super Bowl. The whole sugya about the gambling. About can I bet on the horses? Can I bet on the races? Can I bet on the pigeons in the days of the Mishnayos? Yeah. When I enter into an agreement with you that if I lose, if my horse loses, I'm going to give you X amount of money, I don't think my horse is going to lose. If I thought my horse was going to lose, I'd be pretty foolish to be betting on it. So I think my horse is going to win. I think my team is going to win. So, and now it turns out that most of my team loses. So I didn't really think I'm going to have to pay the money. So, well, maybe I'm not mechuyav to pay the money. Maybe you have no right to collect the money from me. Maybe you're a gazlan when you collect the money from me. So that's a very, very serious shaila. Any kinds of gambling, any shape or any kind of card play, anything is a potential, serious, serious potential shaila of gazela. Again, the different nuances, that's what we spoke a lot about last year. But I'll call upon him, that's a potential, raise a red flag in terms of asmachta lo kanya. So the Rishonim have a big problem with these shtar shiduchim. How could it be that, how does this binding? That the couple's agreeing to get married, and he says, oh, if I back out from the shidduch, I'm going to pay $100,000. But he doesn't think he's going to back out. If he thought he's going to back out, then they wouldn't have gotten engaged in the first place. So obviously he thinks he's going to go through with the wedding. And now next month something comes up, and he wants to back out. So come to Rishonim and say, how can you do it? So how does that work? How is that binding? How can the other party take you to a din Torah to make you pay the money? So the Rishonim give different reasons in the sugi of asmachta why the shtar shiduchim is not an asmachta. Why is shtar shiduchim better than some of the other agreements, some of the other deals that are problematic with asmachta? One of the famous reasons that's given by Tosfos is that in the case of the shtar shiduchim, the Tosfos used to write the shtar shiduchim, in the case of the shtar shiduchim, so Tosfos writes, you embarrass the other person. The bottom line is you cause the person damage. My back out in the shidduch, so you cause some kind of a hezek, you cause some kind of a boshes to the other person, so you really should be paying the other person. So you put a dollar amount on that. You said, we're going to make a deal, it's going to be $100,000 without my boshes. In the case of the horse races, because my horse lost, so therefore I'm supposed to pay the money. Where does it say in Shulchan Aruch that if your horse loses, you have to pay money? It says, you're only paying the money because you agreed to pay the money. So that agreement was a conditional agreement that you didn't really think was going to happen in the first place. So that's a smach lokanya. So Tosfos says, b'medavar memurim, there's a sugi of a smach lokanya. That's only when you put your foot in your mouth. You got yourself into a situation that the halacha didn't force you into. There's no din that if your horse loses, you have to pay money. Your horse loses, you have to pay money because you said you're going to pay money. Whereas if you embarrass this girl, so you embarrass her, you should be paying money anyway. You should be paying Dmei Boshes. So now you put a monetary amount to what the Dmei Boshes is. So we're going to enforce that in Beisdin. That was Tosfos' suggestion. Other reasons, other Rishonim give other reasons. But getting back to our story, that's the dinamum. That's not really Asugya. Asugya is the Evan Ezra, is the condition part. So come to Yechorom and then raise a red flag about this entire institution of Shtar Shiduchim. What basically happened is that the Chas and the Kal just entered into an agreement which they said, if they back out from the wedding, they're going to pay X amount of money. Now, when they're standing under the chuppah, they don't want to go through with this shidduch. They wanted to back out. Why? Possibly. Why did they not back out? Because they knew it's going to cost them $100,000 to back out. So they're getting married under duress. The duress is the $100,000. So you could argue, well, what's the duress? Just pay the $100,000. But that's the story by Gittin. The same way by Gittin, we said, according to many, we've shown him, if tachlis, you're under duress, you created the duress. You have a way out of the duress. That's all true. But you're under duress. Right now you have a gun to your head, a figurative gun. The figurative gun is a $100,000 bill. So just as we would never want to give a get when the person is giving a get in fear of paying the $100,000 bill, so too we won't want him to get on stand under the chuppah in fear of having to pay the $100,000 if he backs out. So why isn't every kedusha no good? Every kedushin which a shtar shiduchim was signed before, again, we don't have the shtar shiduchims anymore, so we're not so worried about this. But in the days of Rishonim, they used to sign the shtar shiduchim right and left. Every marriage should be no good because every marriage is potentially under duress. So that's a bomb kasha nechvarim deal. It has to be an answer to that kasha. Rabbi Natam signed shtar shiduchim. The Rishonim used to write shtar shiduchim. The Tosfos wrote it all the time. So what's the answer to that kasha? So hopefully we have to go back to our sugi of Taliyah v'Zavin and reevaluate our sugi again to try to figure out what the answer to that dilemma that the nechvarim posed. Let's show on Friday what we did in work.